Welcome to Shiur in Sforno, Parshas Re'eh. The Shiur this evening is sponsored by Moshe and Shoshana Shillet, marking the yahrzeit tonight of his father, Ezra ben Dov, the Neshama Shel Avraham Aliyah. It's also sponsored by Charles Rubin in memory of his father, Isidore Rubin, Yitzchak and Moshe Tzvi, Neshama Shel Avraham Aliyah. And in both cases, the Timotz Nachas from the Torah Mitzvahs and Ma'asim Tovim that the families are involved in. Perek Yudalid in Parshas Re'eh opens, Bonim Atem, Lashem Elokeichem, you, Klal Yisrael, are children to Hashem, your God. Lo sisgodedu, you should not cut yourselves. Lo sosimu karcha beinenechem lomeis, and you should not rip out hair so as to cause a bald spot on your forehead as a sign of mourning for someone who passed away. That was apparently something which was common in those days. People who wanted to demonstrate anguish over the loss of someone who was close to them, again, in the non-Jewish world, would cut themselves, they would gash themselves, they would rip out hair in order to cause a bald spot. So both of these things are prohibited to you because Bonim Atem, you are children to Hashem, your God. What's the connection between Klal Yisrael being children of Hashem and the prohibition of these practices? We'll come back to that in just a second. The next pasuk goes on to further explain why these practices should be prohibited. Ki am kodosh atol Hashem Elokecha, because you are a nation which is holy to Hashem your God. Uvecha bochar Hashem lios lo liam skulo mikol ha'amim, and in you Hashem chose to be a special nation, a treasured nation from all of the nations, asher apneihu adama, all of the nations which are on the face of the earth. So it's clear from context that the pasuk is explaining why it is that these extreme practices of mourning are prohibited, but what exactly is the explanation which is being given? So here, the Sforno writes as follows. Bonim atem l'ashem elokeichem, lo siskodedu. So again, the first pasuk started off by saying, you are children to Hashem, you should not cut yourselves. So writes the Sforno, she'en roi laharos tachlis hadaigo v'hatsar, al hakorov hames, kishenishar korov nichbod mimenu, b'mayla uvetikvas tov. Very, very beautiful expression, the Sforno says. Why is the person despondent? Why is he thinking of cutting himself? Why is he thinking of ripping out his hair? Because he lost, unfortunately, a very close relative. Okay, we can understand his anguish. But comes the pasuk and tells us that anguish has to be mitigated, because as much as the person has lost a close relative, you still have an even greater relative that you're connected to. Nichbad mimenu, a relative who is even more honorable than the relative whom you lost, b'mayla, in stature, uvetikvas tov, and a relative who is able to bestow wonderful things upon you. Who is this relative? This relative is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as it were. So that's the implication of the phrase Bonim Atem LaShem Elokeichem. Even when you lose a close relative and you think that you're all alone in the world, let's say it's your last close relative who passed away, the person feels utterly alone. The beautiful reassurance of that opening line of the pasuk, Bonim Atem LaShem Elokeichem, you're children of Hashem, is essentially to tell the person you're not really alone. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is your father. He's your relative, and he's not going away. You know, he's always going to be here, you know, despite whatever other relatives, as it were, pass away. And this relative, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is, you know, has properties that no human relative can really have. So don't be despondent. You're never really alone. That's the message. That's a beautiful message of these opening psukim. Right, so, you know, the pasuk is not saying there's no reason to mourn, because clearly there is a reason to mourn. The pasuk is saying there's no need to mourn to that degree, you know. In other words, there's a difference between mourning and being despondent. You know, the sense that I have nothing left, you know, the sense that would cause a person to rip his own skin, to tear out his hair, you know, that's more than just mourning. That's a sense of, what am I going to do? I have no one left. No, that's not true. You have someone left. You have a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Yeah.
Right.
Right. In other words, the pasuk is addressing the mourner. The mourner has to reaffirm his faith that not all is lost. The friends of the mourner have an obligation to comfort the person, so they have to go and speak to him. Nothing directly related to the pasuk, but since we're here, so I'll throw in just a beautiful vort from Rav Soloveitchik. I think Rabbi Ganak Shlipa from the OU quotes this in one of his svarim. The Rav Zatzal stated that nechama, that consolation, is an integral part of the fulfillment of avelus, the fulfillment of the idea of mourning. In other words, the fulfillment of mourning is not complete unless there's some degree of nechama, of consolation. And Rav Soloveitchik used that to explain the phenomena that we're experiencing at this time of year on the Jewish calendar. We just got through Tisha B'Av. And we have the Sheva de Nechemta, we have the seven Haftaras of consolation, a whole period of time on the Jewish calendar devoted to Nechama, to consolation. And, you know, the question is asked year after year, what exactly is the consolation? You know, if you tell me that the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, okay, that's consoling. But basically, we're holding in the same place after Tisha B'Av as we were before Tisha B'Av. You know, the status quo doesn't really seem to have changed, at least as far as we can tell. So where is the Nechama? What exactly, you know, just because you read a Haftarah from Sefer Yeshayahu, now all of a sudden we're going to be comforted. Nachamu, Nachamu, Ami. Okay, now that you said so, I'm going to do it. Where's the Nechama? Where's the consolation? So as Rav Soloveitchik explained, that the Avelus over the Beis HaMikdash is not complete until we experience consolation, because every Avelus needs this balm, this healing balm that takes place afterwards. Otherwise, it's not really considered to be avelos in the fullest sense of the term. The cycle of avelos demands a certain type of nechama. That's not directly relevant to what we're talking about here, but since we're on the subject of avelos, let's just go back to the pasuk. So again, bonim atem l'Hashem elokeichem lo tisgo didu. So, you know, even if you feel despondent because you've lost a relative, Hashem is your relative. He's still here. He hasn't abandoned you. You're a child of Hashem, and that's the Sfarno goes on to say. Lefikoch atem bonim l'Hashem. Therefore, you who are children of Hashem, shu avichem kayim lo'ad. Hashem is your father. He lives forever. En roi shetidagu v'sisablu v'tachlis al shum meis. It's not appropriate that you should mourn and worry to that extent. Obviously, you're supposed to mourn. It's a mitzvah to mourn when a close relative passes away. But to that extreme extent, that would imply that the person, you know, has lost sight of his connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that would be terrible. In other words, in a sense, the excess of mourning over the person who has passed away shows a lack of connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And, you know, that of course is a terrible theological statement for the person to be making by his excessive mourning. It's interesting to compare this with the Ramban. Again, we've noted a number of times, the Sfarno very often either reflects the Ramban or offers a different perspective on an issue, on a question that was raised by the Ramban. The Ramban over here raises the same question, you know, what's the connection between Bonim Atem L'Hashem Elokeichem and Lo Tisgo Didu? So the Ramban says, Bonim Atem L'Hashem Elokeichem means that you, Klal Yisrael, are destined for Olam Haba. We believe that the Neshama is eternal, that the Neshama is going to outlast the body. When you mourn excessively over the passing of someone, you're essentially denying the existence of Olam Haba, because you're saying the person is gone and lost forever, and they're never going to come back. And that's a terrible theological statement for the person to be making by virtue of his or her actions. So, according to the Ramban, excess mourning is a form of kfira, a form of denial of Olam Haba. The Sfarno is taking that one step further. Excessive mourning is kfira, it's denial of the unique relationship that we have with Hashem, and maybe on some level it's even kfira in the belief in Hashem himself. Because if you really believe that there's an eternal God who has a relationship with me, so then you're never really going to be alone. So in other words, even in the loss, even with the loss of a very close relative, you still have the Ribbono Shel Olam. You're not adrift at sea, you know, without any, you know, parent, so to speak, taking care of you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is your parent. He's going to take care of you, you know, notwithstanding the loss. Yeah.
Maybe there's two things that come in, maybe one similar or different than the other. The first thing is, the Baruch Dayan Ma'emes, tells you that the middleman is incompetent, he said, as opposed to the justice, it's the right thing. That's the first point. Maybe they're all being put together. The other thing is, I'm only not an Eshem of salvation, so the plural language is Hashem is also, he's also mourning the loss of the opportunity
right.
that person to be more creative with doing good deeds. So two things may be somehow.
Right. I hear. So the pasuk continues, Lo sasimu karcha b'neichem lames ki am kadosh ata. Right. So we go into the second pasuk. Why shouldn't you do these things? Ki am kadosh ata, because you're a holy nation. So on this, the Sfarno writes, Am kadosh ata, mezumen l'chayei ha'olam haba. Right. You are a nation which is destined for the world to come. This sounds like what the Ramban said in the beginning of the pasuk. So, by the way, why does Am Kadosh Ata tell us that we are a nation that is destined for Olam Haba, for the next world? So this goes back, again, the Svarno is very terse. He doesn't really spell things out. But it fits beautifully with an idea that the Svarno has said numerous times over the course of Chamisha Chumshei Torah. The definition of Kadosh, according to the Svarno, is eternal. What does it mean for something to be holy? Right? Holiness is something which is eternal, which doesn't dissipate, right? In other words, something is holy, so it maintains its holiness. We know that for that reason, if something had kedusha, you know, an object had kedusha, say fatara, tefillin, whatever it happens to be, even when that object is physically worn out, the kedusha doesn't disappear. We have to treat that object with reverence because of the kedusha that was there, even though the object is no longer usable. You have to bury the object. You have to treat it with a certain type. Why? Because Kedusha has the implication of eternity. So Am Kadosh Ata means you are an eternal nation. You're a nation that's Mezumen L'Chayei Ha'olam Haba. You're destined to the world to come. And therefore, Gam Kein Ein L'Hitztayr Me'o Bishvul Nezek Magia L'Meis B'Misasa. And that's yet another reason that the Pasuk is explaining that you shouldn't mourn excessively. You shouldn't mourn excessively because, you know, you're not really bereft. You know, your Father in heaven is still there and still taking care of you. What's the other reason people might mourn excessively? Over a feeling of anguish for the person who passed away. Nebuch, this person passed away, you know. Think of all of the unfulfilled dreams and aspirations that person had and, you know, everything that's lost. No, says the Pasuk, that person is not really lost either. There's no ultimate nezek. There's no ultimate damage that person is suffering, even though they're not here physically. Why? Ki am kadosh ata. Because we believe in Olam Haba. We are a nation which is eternal. So that person who passed away really just moved from one mode of existence to another mode of existence. You know, in other words, don't feel so bad for their loss either. Again, you're supposed to mourn. You're supposed to mourn for the fact that the person can't be here with us in this world and can't influence us, etc., etc., etc. But don't feel that the person's whole existence went up in smoke. No, the person moved from one type of existence to another type of existence. He's in Olam Haba. Ashir Sha'as Koras Ruach Bohem. 1 hour of pleasure in the next world is Yafa Mikol Chayei Ha'olam Hazeh, exceeds all of the pleasure that the person could get in this world. So the person, you know, when we say kind of as a cliche, the person moved on to a better place, you know, it's not a cliche, it's real. You know, that's ki am kadosh atol Hashem Elokecha. You know, you are a holy nation. You are a nation which has Olam Haba. So, you know, don't mourn over what the person himself has lost excessively either. They're a lot happier where they happen to be right now, even if we feel their loss here in this world. And there's yet another thing which the Pasuk says. So the Pasuk says, don't mourn excessively because you still have that relationship with Hashem. Bonim atem l'Hashem elokeichem. Don't mourn excessively because the person who passed away is in Olam Haba. Ki am kadosh ato l'Hashem elokeichem. And finally, b'cha b'char Hashem lios lo li'am skula. HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose you to be a treasured nation from all of the nations. Where does that point come in? So here the Sfarno says, this is the final point that the Torah is making. V'lochein hu oser ze lochem, v'lo osar oso livnei noach, she'enom kol kach skula. This last part of the pasuk is trying to answer the following question. So, if if the prohibition against hurting oneself, ripping out one's hair, cutting oneself, is in place because we believe that we have this ongoing connection with Hashem, even after a person has passed away, and we believe in Olam Haba, so why aren't these prohibitions that apply to Bnei Noach as well? Why shouldn't this apply to a non-Jew? Think about the question for a minute, right? There's a tremendous implications in the Sforno's question. The implication of the question is that a Ben Noach has that kind of relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? And the implication is that a Ben Noach potentially has Olam Haba, right? We know Chazal tell us, Chasidei Umos HaOlam Yeshlam Chelek Olam Haba, the righteous among the nations do have a place in the world to come. Otherwise, if you didn't make those two ground assumptions, you wouldn't have the question. Well, of course, these halachas are not relevant to Bnei Noach because they don't have that relationship with Hashem and they're not going to go to Olam Haba. But obviously, the Sforno holds that that's not true. They have that relationship. They are going to go to Olam Haba. So why don't we find that a Ben Noach, that a non-Jew, is also prohibited from cutting his flesh and pulling out his hair as a sign of mourning? So the answer is because Klal Yisrael is considered to be a skula. It has a special connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a connection which the rest of the world doesn't quite have. So in other words, Bonim Atem LaShem Elokeichem, yes, it's true that a non-Jew has a relationship with Hashem, but you have a closer relationship with Hashem. You're children of Hashem. It's true that the non-Jew can potentially achieve Olam Haba as well, but you, as a Jew, have a guaranteed place in Olam Haba. That's the skula. You have a treasure which is unique to Klal Yisrael, and because, by definition, you have these wonderful traits, you know, this ability to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this automatic parent-child relationship, as it were, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the automatic Olam Haba, which is the portion of every Jewish person, Kol Yisrael Yeshlam Chelek LaOlam Haba. So therefore, these prohibitions against excessive mourning apply specifically to Klal Yisrael and not to the rest of the world. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. So is the mitzvah of Kriya a counterbalance to the Isser of Lo Siskod? It's a very interesting theory. Well, you're suggesting that it is. It's a very good suggestion. I don't think it's obvious that it is. It's perhaps a very good interpretation of the mitzvah of Kriya. In other words, you know, don't rip your skin, rip your clothing. You know, that will be a substitute for ripping your clothing. You know, even if we look, it could be. It's a very fascinating way of looking at the mitzvah of Kriya, but I think it still speaks to the point that the Sforno is making, meaning it's excessive to rip your skin. It's not excessive to rip your clothing, so you'll get another shirt. You know. Right. No. So it has to be. It has to be an actual piece of clothing. Right. Right. Right, right. No, so it has to be an actual piece of clothing. So in other words, it can't be something cheap, you know, and immaterial. But at the same time, you know, it's still far less excessive than, you know, ripping your arm open, you know. I mean, right, 100%. Right, 100%. Okay. The Torah then moves on to speak about the laws of kashrus. Perek Yudalet Pasuk Gimel. Lo sochal kol to'eva. Don't eat anything which is an abomination. Sforno seems to be bothered by the following question. Again, we'll try to tease out the question from the few words that the Sforno says. Lo sochal kol to'eva, don't eat any abomination, assumes from the get-go that we have an idea of what these abominable, you know, foods are. You know, there's sort of a latent assumption that we already know what's kosher and what's not kosher. The Torah goes on to list off the animals which we are allowed to eat, zosa behema sher tochelu, shor, seksav, v'seizim, ayol, tzvi, v'yachmor, etc., etc., etc. But the stark statement, lo sochal kol to'eva, seems to assume that we already have some idea going into the pasuk what that to'eva, what that, you know, what that abominable food might be. Why would I come in with an assumption as to what's kosher and what's not kosher? So here the Sfarno points out that even before Matan Torah, there was a concept of kosher and non-kosher animals. Hine kodem Matan Torah, no da hevdel ben tomei latohar. People knew the difference between a kosher and a non-kosher animal even before Matan Torah. There was this way of looking at the animal world as being kosher and non-kosher. Where do we see that? Kimavur b'inyan Noach, as we see by the Teva, right? The Ribbono Shel Olam tells Noach, take seven types of kosher animals, habehema tahora, into the seven pairs of kosher animals into the Teva, and only one pair of non-kosher animals. So Rashi over there writes, right, if you remember from Parshas Noach, Mikan Shalom ad Noach Torah. How did Noach know what was a kosher animal, was a non-kosher animal? Right, so Mstami Googled it, right? But this was before Google, right? So you see that Noach learned Torah. That's Rashi writes, quoting from Chazal. Obviously, he learned Torah, so he knew the difference between a kosher and a non-kosher animal. The implication of that Rashi is that this knowledge of a kosher animal versus a non-kosher animal was something kind of unique to Noach. Noach knew it because he learned Torah. But if you would have gone to the average person at the time of the Mabul and said, quick, you know, kosher animal versus non-kosher animal, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? The average person would have said, oh, what are you talking about? Kosher, non-kosher? I don't know, you know, so what are you talking about? Right? The Sfarno seems to be saying a little bit differently. The Sfarno seems to be saying that it was actually common knowledge at that time what was kosher and what was non-kosher. It wasn't unique to Noach, you know? Kodem Matan, again, his language, Kodem Matan Torah, no da hevdel ben tomei latar. You know, this was a common classification. The concept of these are kosher animals, these are non-kosher animals, was known to the world at large at that time. It was just something that didn't translate into actual practice. Yeah. Right, right. So in other words, it was irrelevant because meat was prohibited, but they still had a notion. That's why, you know, the terms kosher and non-kosher are perhaps a little bit deceiving. The term that the Torah itself uses is tahar and tamei, or tahar and she'eno, and eno tahara, right? Now, they had a notion that certain animals had a certain purity associated with them. Certain animals did not have that purity associated with them. Again, as Yaakov points out, it was sort of academic because they couldn't eat any meat, you know, prior to the Mabul. But they did have a notion that these animals are good, these animals are bad. As we see that the Ribbono Shel Olam communicated this idea to Noach, there's the Behema Tahara and a Behema Asher Inena Tahara. And Noach didn't say, huh? What do you mean by that? You know, Noach apparently understood what the Ribbono Shel Olam was talking about. Mikol Makom, Kishehitir Hakel, Yisbarach, Lenoach Ubarav Achilas Bali Chayim. Nonetheless, after the Mabul, when the Ribbono Shel Olam allowed Noach and his children to eat animals, they were not allowed to eat animals beforehand. Lo hivdil ben tamei latar, the Ribbono Shel Olam, and the first time that he allowed meat to be consumed, didn't draw a distinction between quote-unquote kosher animals and non-kosher animals. He said it's all okay. So even though they had a notion, they knew that this is a behema tahara, this is a behema that's not tahara, it didn't make a difference. It didn't make a difference before the Mabul because they couldn't eat anything. And after the Mabul, they were allowed to eat everything, even though they knew in theory, these animals are good, these animals are not so good. However, omnam ato bios chakadosh uskulo mikol ha'amim ein roi lecholios nizon min hatomei umesuav lehidamos lemizga. However, you Klal Yisrael, I'm now instituting a new concept for you, Klal Yisrael, based on a distinction which even the non-Jews knew going back generations. Everyone always knew the difference between an animal that was tahar and tamei. But now the Ribbono Shel Olam is saying, you Klal Yisrael should only eat behemos, you should only eat animals that are tahorim, not those that are tameim. Why? Because an animal which is tamei, causes you to take on the attributes of that animal. Lidamos lemizgo. There's a certain character trait that a trefa animal possesses. Again, they tend to be more aggressive. You know, they tend to be more carnivorous. You know, they tend to be tough animals. You are what you eat. If you eat those behemos tmeos, you will take on the character traits of those non-kosher animals. For the world at large, okay, it is what it is, it's fine. But for you, Klal Yisrael, I'm holding you to a higher standard. I want you to eat animals which will have a good influence on you, and that means only eating the animals that are tahar.
That was the kind of like, so it's like if you not saying kosher,
right, right. So the truth is, the Sfarno is not the only one to mention this. Many of the Mefarshim say that that's one of the reasons behind the ideas of kashrus, that if you eat animals that are tahar, what makes these animals tahar? What makes them tahar is that they have desirable traits, which if you eat them, you're more, again, nothing's automatic. You know, if you're a difficult person, don't say, well, just eat kosher, everything's going to be fine. But in other words, it pushes you in a certain direction. You know, there is this concept, you are what you eat, and it does influence the person in a certain way. Along those lines, before we finish up, Rav Shamsher Fahal Hirsch in his Chorev, where he talks about the reasons for different mitzvos as a whole very complicated system, where he describes the different traits associated with kosher and non-kosher animals and develops the idea, you know, in great detail as to how the kosher animals impart traits which are desirable and the non-kosher animals impart traits that are not desirable. You know, he talks about a certain... Just to take one example, he says, you know, if you look at the animals which we're allowed to eat, they tend to be very docile. The Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, values a certain type of docility. You know, in other words, we're not supposed to be just doormats that everybody walks on us. But, you know, you're supposed to be a calm, you know, not an aggressive type of person. And if you look at the animals that we eat, they tend to have that non-aggressive, very sort of chilled, laid-back kind of personality, as opposed to the animals, which, generally speaking, we're not allowed to eat. So that's an idea already. The Sfarno says it, others say it before the Sfarno, because you are a holy nation, everybody knew the distinction between an animal which is Tomei and Tahar, but I want you to make that into something which affects your diet, as opposed to just an academic piece of knowledge that everybody knew way back, even before the Mabul itself. Here, Rabbi Hanan ben Akasha Omer, Ratzah Kodesh Baruch,